go through a few of the ground rules here. We'll have you give your opening statement, and before that, too, if you have any questions of us, you can do so. And then after that, we'll have questions here, and when we've got about 5 minutes left of our allotted time, we'll call it, and you can give a closing statement as well. So at this point, thank you again for being here. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Well, good morning, and a nice, chilly Minnesota morning to all of you. Mr. Chairman, Mayor Brady, and members of the Regents Candidate Advisory Council, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to sit before you and undergo this interview for a regent position in Congressional District Number 1. As many of you have heard, my name is Claire Bender, and I'll tell you a little bit about me. I was born in rural Nebraska, and I have been a resident of Rochester, Minnesota since 1975. Until last week, when I retired from the Mayo Clinic, I was employed as a full-time physician as a diagnostic radiologist, and I dedicated my entire life to my profession. During that time, I had the opportunity to serve in a wide variety of clinical practice initiatives, educational opportunities, research activities, and serve in a diversity of administrative roles at that institution. I'd like to share just a few of my governance experiences. For 12 years, I had the pleasure of serving on the Rochester Board of Governors at the Mayo Clinic. And at that time, I was also the chair of the Institutional Personnel Committee for 10 of those years. During that time, it was my role to oversee the growth and behavior of the 1,500 staff physicians, and to not only update but to develop new human resource policies. During that time, I was chair of the Institutional Diversity Committee. And after my role as on the Board of Governors, I became the dean of the Mayo School of Health Sciences. And being one of five deans under the educational mission of that institution, I oversaw 60 different programs, approximately 1,500 students on all three campuses, and we had about a $15 million budget that we adhered to very closely. Also during that time, I served as the education committee chair of all of Rochester, and that was the on-site overseer of all of the educational programs that included the Mayo Medical School, the Graduate School of Medicine, which was the PhD and Master's in Biological Sciences. Again, the variety of allied health students, which ranged from master's, clinical doctorate, baccalaureate, associate, and certificate programs. Also during that time, I co-chaired our institutional higher education reaccreditation process with the Higher Learning Commission, previously known as North Central Accreditation. And I'm happy to say we were awarded our 10-year full reaccreditation during that time. Other boards that I've served on in education was my home or my alma mater, Nebraska Wesleyan University in Lincoln, Nebraska. And at that time, I chaired the Academic Affairs Committee. My fiduciary responsibility, I think you can gather from my governance experience as the Board of Governors activities, as the dean. Some other opportunities I had, I chaired the Mayo Health Plan when we changed from a no cost for the employee to a copay process, which was through some very tumultuous times. I currently sit on an advisory committee for Allied Health at the Northern Kaiser Permanente School of Allied Health. I'm limited as a physician. Most physicians can't even balance their checkbook, and that's true. But when I went back to school, I studied healthcare management, and I'm always learning when it comes to formal finance education. So some of the opportunities to address equity and diversity in a leadership governance role and as when I was personnel committee. I am, would like to share with you that at the time I was asked to develop and implement the very first mandatory mutual respect program at the institution for all staff positions. And that program was called the Just Doctors Program. The purpose of this was to set the bar for improving communication and understanding and respecting all differences on our campus. Later, the same program was extended to all of the allied health personnel on the campus, and it went further. It was rolled out to our two southern campuses. Also during that time, I started the physician leadership program at Mayo, and I also was asked to develop the initiative for performance review, especially from top administrators. Also during the time when I was personnel committee chair, I co-led the development and implementation of domestic partner benefits at our institution. I see my leadership strengths as being, I'm known as a people person. I'm a team builder. I'm a team player. I believe in very open, direct communication. I think I'm an excellent listener as well. I think my top two leadership skills are passion and energy for what I do. Others have described me as being honest, fair, and trusted. My overall leadership style would be that of a servant leadership style. My weaknesses, we all have weaknesses, as I alluded to earlier, would be finance. But when we're talking about education, with my experience in a wide variety of educational opportunities, I would say that I understand the business of education. My University of Minnesota system involvement, as you've probably read, I'm a 2008 graduate of the University of Minnesota Executive Program, Master's of Public Health, and my focus was on environmental health and safety. I previously was a member of the Governor Pawlenty Higher Education Development Committee, and the purpose of that time was to examine, assess, and discover higher education in the Rochester region. It was focused on being research, not to duplicate any other campus or program that existed within the university system, and also concentrate on some of the benefits in the Rochester area, being business, technology, and healthcare, and thus UMR was formed. I have co-chaired with Chancellor Lemkuhl what has been called the Education Coordinating Committee, where both UMR and Mayo Education have shared ideas since its inception, and I currently am a member of the Governor Dayton's Blue Ribbon Panel to seek improvements for the University of Minnesota medical students. This is for the health of the citizens of the state of Minnesota. It's also for the students, faculty, and administration. Our last meeting is tomorrow, where we have a proposed final draft to undergo thorough discussion. I have had the opportunity to go on to the University of Minnesota website. I've very briefly reviewed the vast and important variety of policies. Two of the questions that were asked of me were to talk about board operations and my understanding of both a member of the board and as an individual. I have gone through them one by one. I will not reiterate them, but I will tell you that I fully embrace them and I feel that I can imbue them and live them to the maximum. Just a few comments. I do know and respect that the authority of the Board of Regents resides only with the board as a whole and not as an individual. That one of the goals is to be fully informed about the effectiveness of the management of the university, that the Board of Regents is accountable to the public for accomplishing the mission of the university. It is to foster communication with the citizens of the state of Minnesota, its elected representatives and university community, and to work with President Kaler or the next president, if that be, to build and foster the relationship and trust with openness. Why would I like to become a Board of Regents member? I see this as an opportunity to serve the state of Minnesota, as I have dedicated my life to my previous profession. Now is an opportunity for me to help build and grow the education mission of the University of Minnesota. And I think I can help bring added value to the University of Minnesota. I thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. First question, Jerry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Bender, thank you for applying for this position. I've reviewed your application. I've got to say it's very impressive. I appreciate your honesty saying these are my weaknesses, these are my strengths. We got to disclose that one of your references said your greatest weakness was being a Cornhusker. And I think in your description, I think you've overcome it. So thank you for that.
Thank you very much. I'm proud to be a Gopher.
Actually, I have kind of two questions. The first one, though, it will relate to your experience and some of the things you related to here, is that 40% of the budget is related to health sciences.
Yes.
And as I'm sure you're aware, over the past several years, the university has gotten some bad press. There's some opinion out there. They are not the same institution that they were at one time. I'd like your opinion on that, and what sort of things do you think that you're directly involved in this? What things do we need to do to improve the status of our health science department?
Thank you very much. A very important question. When you share that 40% of the budget is health care, and what we do, one of three new jobs will be in healthcare, so I think it's pretty equal. I think it's having been a resident of the state of Minnesota and watched the University of Minnesota and its healthcare initiative grow, I think there's several issues. In the 1990s, the loss of multiple tenured professors was a significant issue, and I know Dean Jackson is trying to reinstitute that. It not only has to do with funding, but it has to do with quality of research, which is quickly linked with the quality of education. The best and brightest applicants or students, if you will apply to where they see the best science. It all relates about to reputation. And that was one of them. The loss of over 100 tenured professors was very, very significant. And I think that's a major initiative that needs to be rebuilt. And I know the dean is working on that. And if you'll allow me, being a clinical educator,
good question.
And if I hope I don't step on anybody's toes here, but when the university had to sell off the hospital system to Fairview or to that sector, and again, I'm going to speak parochially here, and about my passion is clinical education. Where do students can learn the book learning, the didactic learning, if you will. But it's the clinical education, the experience, where the patients are, where simulation is, but mainly where the patients are. That's a big part of all of medical education, not just for physicians, but all of the allied health as well. That was a significant issue. And I know the relationships with Fairview System are improving, but clinical education sites has been another issue. The other issue for the medical school is the pool of applicants to medical school. These students are bright across the United States, and this year I had the opportunity to be on a medical school admissions committee in Rochester. And, you know, the average number of applications is the lowest is 15, the range is 30. So they go out and interview everywhere. So the student applicant from around the nation, and that includes Minnesota, they'll interview, if they are selected at Duluth, they'll come to the Twin Cities, they'll come to Rochester, they'll go to the region. And it goes on and on and on. The students look for what can they give me? The resources, the curriculum, the facilities, the graduation rate, the mentoring, the opportunity of the program to do something different, the differentiation of the program. One of the things that I think, and I've commented on to Commissioner Pogemiller and the committee, is the School of Public Health at the university is very, very strong. And the strong clinical research they do there, the issue of global health, that's Twin Cities, that's Greater Minnesota, that's the nation, that's the world. The School of Public Health is an expert in global health. So partnering, collaborations, the opportunities should be built. So I hope I've addressed your question. I'm very passionate about some of these issues. And I can see why. I was delighted when I was asked to be on the committee. I think the committee is addressing those issues, but it is about funding. And then the rural physician component with University of Minnesota Duluth, its rural physician, its stellar rural physician program that it has that needs to be sustained and actually needs to grow.
Thank you. I have to add, I'm a product of that clinical education in Duluth and in Minneapolis. So, can I just
go ahead.
Tag something related to that? being a longstanding a Mayo physician and now worked somewhat with the university, is Mayo a competitor with the university or are they colleagues? Yeah, well, that's not the right term, but I mean, not sure I'm asking that in the right way, but do you see us as working more together, or are we more in competition with each other?
Excellent question, Dr. Rogers. Actually, I was asked by Commissioner Pogemiller about that. You know, to be quite frank, why doesn't the university and Mayo get along? And I said, whoa, wait a minute. Wait a minute here. I said, pardon me, Commissioner, but I'd like to speak to the contrary. I said, historically, if you go back to the early 1915s, when the university and Mayo was a product of the University of Minnesota, you move fast forward, and there was a physician by the name of Dr. John Shepherd, who was a physiologist at Mayo, and he wrote a book called Inside Mayo, where he described the relationship of the university and Mayo as seven marriages and seven divorces. Well, and I would like to add to him, he has now passed on, but I'd like to call it eight marriages. I think with the University of Minnesota Rochester, the collaboration in that development, it's not only health sciences that has been formed, but you look at the sharing of the research opportunity. There is a program called BICB, and it's the sharing, it's state-funded, $7 million has been funded to share principal investigators, both from Mayo and from the university, and they're equal numbers. I also know that individual experiences in cases where Mayo investigators actually call up investigators or researchers on the Twin Cities campus and ask, can I use your hyperpolarizer, for example, with the research? Mayo doesn't have a hyperpolarizer piece of research equipment. The ground level, the grassroots collaboration is there. I would say that competition, no. Maybe we're all competing for the NIH funding, which has been so drastically reduced. But I think the individual efforts, I do not see us walking over each other, to be quite honest. And I feel very passionate about it. You can ask Commissioner Polgemiller, I feel very passionate about the marriage, the eighth marriage that we're in.
Thank you very much.
Lois.
Dr. Bender, I have a couple of questions. One is just a direct what happened. 100 doctors cycling out in the 90s. Was that aging out or issues that took them out? I don't need a lot of detail. I just need your assessment.
I was not attuned in to that. This is part of the discussion going on with the Governor Dayton's Blue Ribbon panel. But it was a sign of the times. These were stellar researchers in their programs. In competition for other universities to attract and to build their research programs were the majority of the issues. Okay. So it's the competition with the rest of the nation.
And then the question that I was going to ask until I heard that reference. You bring an incredible amount to bear. And I have two questions, and one of them may be rude. You have moved your career to say, I am now ready and the opportunity is present to serve the University of Minnesota. What will Dr. Bender do with this wealth of knowledge if Dr. Bender is not serving the University of Minnesota? And I have a question that tags with that.
If
you were not chosen as a regent.
What am I going to do?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Very good question. Well, I am a fly fisher person, so I'll invite you down to the Driftless area of southeast Minnesota, and show you where some good trout are. I'm an excellent teacher when it comes to fly fishing.
I took a course on it a year and a half ago.
And I hope you're hooked. What will I do? A lot of what my plans are, and I encourage you, any of you who are thinking about retirement, it's a difficult time.
Yes.
And especially when you have, and there's not a good teacher or a good mentor, you have to go through it yourself. And I thought it would never happen to me, but may I say that it's about planning. And part of it relates to my University of Minnesota public health education. Some of the connections that I have made through some of the faculty and some of my classmates across the United States. It's a wonderfully diverse student population. As you examine the student population of some of the students in that program. But I'm going to be a consultant regarding environmental health, or I plan to, environmental health and safety on issues that are out there.
The follow-up that goes with that is, I've had the privilege of serving on this body for several years, and you see people of your caliber with regularity. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they end up on the Board of Regents. The Board of Regents is a highly constrained body. And I posit many times as I'm sitting listening to people saying, that person, that insight, those connections, that passion at this critical time of energy in their lives. Yes, it can serve the university, but can it actually serve the university better in a non-constrained manner?
I think I speak for myself.
Correct.
I always have, and I think my references would share that. I'm a very direct person. yet being very open, and I think that's why people have learned to trust me and probably why I got many of these jobs
or
played many of these roles at the institution. I was involved with the early strategic planning process at the institution and saw the innumerable iterations that strategic planning could take and what it meant. As a Board of Regent member, I understand the strategic role, not operational, not administrative, not, you know, yes, you have to look at the books and you have to be accountable to all of that. But what can I bring? I can bring openness, directness. I've never been afraid to ask the hard question. When Claire Bender opens her mouth, she usually has something to say. She's not a yes person. I'm not afraid to ask the other question or the other side of the issue for better discussion. I see education as a whole, and this reflects what's happening throughout the United States, and it's in a crisis. Mm-hmm. And we have to develop or seek better modeling, more efficient delivery of curriculum. We have to definitely improve graduation rates. We have to dramatically reduce the first and second year attrition rates to make it better. And that's how the University of Minnesota will be a leader. Numbers are not very good when you look at the statistics on all campuses and throughout the entire university system. But I think my track record speaks for itself, and energy and passion. I've taken some really difficult issues, and I think I have built some stellar programs, and I hope to do that as a
University of Minnesota regent
and as a citizen of the state of Minnesota. I chose not to enter public life because of my commitment to my profession. And now's the time. If you were to check my background in Nebraska, you will see what my family did besides sell farm equipment. I said I was not going to mix. There was no role for it. The care of the patient, it was what it was all about.
Thank you for helping put clarity to those thoughts and opportunities.
Mr. Chair, may I follow up on that specific question?
Margaret had a follow-up first.
Then you can. Thank you.
Yes. Your reference to consultant, are you going to be a consultant if you get to be a regent or if you don't get to be a regent? Or are you only going to be a consultant if you don't get to be a regent? Can you talk to that consulting that you plan to do? And I ask you the question because I personally consulted after a 25-year career, and I'm trying to figure that out on conflict of interest and sharing of information. And I'll be candid with you. That's what sparked the red flag. Can you speak to that?
My role is to write scientific reviews, and it's based upon the evidence in the literature.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with my thoughts. It's to understand the literature on environmental diseases.
Okay. That's important.
Position,
very important clarification.
Thank you, and I understand. I understand the history of some of the issues with previous regions.
Yes.
I'm very, very clear, and I thank you for that question.
Okay. It's good answer.
But Jim?
Mr. Chair, the specific question I think that Lois was getting at was, if you were not selected, and if I could posit that, if you're not, would you be willing to be an active and robust advisor, bringing your medical expertise to the regent that does represent the First District?
By all means. Again, my background, and I don't think my record, some of you might not know, but I worked with Frank Serra and his team for many years studying workforce issues regarding allied health throughout the state. And it's something that, you know, 12 years of my life trying to understand allied health, I think I'm one of the few physicians that has, I was a physical therapist and, you know, fast forward and so forth, but I have been passionate about it in good clinical education by all means. I've spent a third of my career doing it. Why should I not? Why should I stop?
Thank you.
Right on.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Bender, I'm a huge champion of yours, and I don't know you personally. We have had very little relationship, but I've read all of, you know, through your application and your reputation, and so such an honor that you are putting your hat in the ring, and I deeply appreciate it. I'm a champion of yours because of the role you've had in shaping the type of education and outreach at the Mayo Clinic, and I think we have so much to learn from the potential of that relationship. And so I'm one who believes in the eighth marriage, and stands strongly in the importance of that for the world, not just for our state. Because I think if we can leverage the power of the university and what Mayo brings to the table, and so that's just an aside. In particular, the patient-centered care, which is the Mayo culture, in my opinion, is missing at the University of Minnesota Hospital. And I have anecdotal patient information that would lead me to that conclusion, and more than one, two, three, four. So if you could say something about your intention, and do you, is that an area of interest for you? And also, UMNR, for anybody who's not been there, is unbelievable forward-thinking campus. Do you see any way to bring kind of best teachings and learning from that to the university?
Thank you, Senator. One of the observations that I have followed during my education component at Mayo was the allied health education at the university. And the organization charts of each organization tend to be very, very different. And you'll forgive me, I cannot give you the current organizational chart of the Academic Health Center because I think it might be in a state of flux.
Always.
thank you. But where does allied health education sit? Allied health education is not just for the Twin Cities. It's for the greater good of the state. And it needs some work. And I think the program directors, the individual program directors, and I think the dean of the medical school would agree with that. I do believe that going back to what I said earlier about the loss of the major clinical education side, it's not a major loss, but the university and the oversight of the clinical teaching of all of its students, you know, to be shifted to the Fairview, and I mean the physicians. I know many physicians and allied health people there on those staffs. The commitment to education. Now, why does a physician want to teach? Why does a X-ray technologist want to teach another student? It only because it makes you smarter. And it ends up talking about patient-centered care. It's all for the good of the patient. And that's what education really is about, stirring that sense of inquiry, that sense of passion. I can do it better. I'm a better detective. I can have a better outcome. It might lead to new research and so forth. So I would even offer, Mr. Erickson, that if I did not get this role, to be an advisor, to try to help, not to duplicate what I experienced and had a part in, but to help it grow and develop at the university. I think it needs a lot.
Very good. Thank you. Harriet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I understand, which is a very limited understanding of the Mayo approach, but I do understand it to be an integrative medical approach. Another way I would think about that as an educator is a cross-disciplinary approach or cross-specialization approach. How would your knowledge of this approach extend beyond healthcare as a member of the Board of Regents?
I think that's an excellent question, and I think therein lies a tremendous opportunity. When I look at the getting back to the organization chart, and again, forgive me, I haven't looked at it most recently, but with the various schools, are there opportunities for sharing? So take genetics. There might be plant genetics, there might be medical genetics, there might be epigenetics and so forth, in spread throughout. But why don't they all get together? And why don't the best of the best teach the student, whether the student is in healthcare or whether they're on the St. Paul campus? I think there are tremendous opportunities for efficiencies and for sharing of sharing and improving curriculum and delivery of systems, if you will. I am aware that the administrative side is working throughout all of the systems and doing it. I think taking a look at all of the curriculum and looking across the system and who's teaching it best. And I think, you know, with Crookston and Morris and Duluth and Rochester, I think those opportunities abound to share the best of the best.
Sure. I would just say that I completely and totally agree with you, and that in my doctoral work here, I felt very constrained to stay within my own discipline. And I felt that limited innovation.
I thank you. As an outsider, and when I was trying, and when back in the mid-2000s, we were going through these organization charts, and we looked at the various schools and the siloing of programs, I think that needs to be looked at and re-looked at, and the opportunities for efficiencies as well as effectiveness and
Absolutely.
Improved effectiveness, and that's quality.
So I look forward to a future conversation about this.
Thank you.
Paul.
Dr. Bender, you've now had 30 seconds of insight about my wife, Dr. Lucy Taylor. So let me take 30 seconds to introduce myself in a similar context. I started my business career more than 50 years ago. For 30 years, I was with International Milling, and then it became International Malta Foods. I still bleed Robin Hood family flour, but it's no longer on the grocery shelf, so I let Lucy buy gold medal flour when we're shopping at Lund's in Wayzata. You still have cbender@mayo.edu for your email address.
Yes.
My suggestion, you know, this is now not a question but a suggestion, consider finding a new email address. And in that regard, yes, you are no longer an employee of the Mayo Clinic, but how do you think your transition away from being an employee will affect your new role, whatever it will be? And do you just wave goodbye, or how do you see that playing out?
Well, thank you, Mr. Taylor. I would say when I made the application, I was still on the Mayo email address. And after completing and meeting the requirements for retirement, and I am on emeritus staff now. So emeritus, and one of the benefits is you still get parking. and they continue the same address, because there are, as a physician, there are issues such as licensure and board certification and
okay.
so forth. But I agree. And I will also share that I still have my University of Minnesota education email address as a student. So I still have that. But point well taken.
Pat.
Point well made. You charmed me in the hallway. Briefly, but I have to put that aside.
I will.
Yeah.
You haven't told any other candidate that.
Well, we have a very difficult decision to make, and the issue of and I'm trying to speak candidly, the issue of conflict of interest is on our minds. Yes. We're trying to weigh that out. There's not an agreement. Your application is very much alive and vibrant, and you're a very good interview. So congratulations on that. But following up on Lois's question a little bit, we want to make sure that we don't put you have considerable talent and an awful lot to offer, and very many experiences and a great passion which has come through very strongly. I am concerned. I don't want to put you in a role that would hamper that. So I'm going to be thinking about that, and I'm not sure how I haven't decided. I'm going to listen a lot to my fellow council members. I'm sorry I've taken too much time on that, but I would like your comment on education and thinking beyond very high-level academic thought, and you certainly have a lot of that. I want to look at the whole higher education system in Minnesota, the private colleges, the University of Minnesota, and the Minsky system. I'm very passionate about some two-year colleges and what they do and how they really help some people who really need a lot of help. I'm sorry, I've tipped my hand already. But how do all these pieces fit together, and what's your understanding of that?
And thank you, Mr. Duncanson. I'm a big fan of the Minsky system as well, and I have actually worked with several of the colleges and organizations, Winona State, RCTC, you just kind of head out to Mankato State and so forth, and many, many fine people. I'm a big fan of the two-year or the Associate of Arts or Associate of Science degree. I'm even a greater fan of certificate programs, which may be 10, 12 week. It's all about work. What we're talking about is providing the highest quality education to meet the workforce needs. And there's a diversity of workforce needs throughout the entire state of Minnesota. And in fact, yesterday I talked to an official at RCTC about a welding, 17-hour going into taking a welding class, a highly regarded welding class. I want to address the conflict of issue because I know that's on everyone's mind. I have never spoken in my 34 and a half years on staff or male. That's always been the CEO, so forth. I have been a good agent. I have been a strong worker. I have been a tireless worker. I hope I have excelled in my profession. And I think the greatest indicator or measurement of outcome would be my patients' results and the satisfaction surveys. And I think let the patients answer that. I think the thing that I take with me from that 34 and a half years is a little bit about morals and ethics, about caring and delivering quality, understanding what quality, understanding what safety is, and how that translates to good outcomes. My entire profession was there. My medical residency was there. It was about learning principles and values. That's who I am. And I hope to share those around the next table that I sit at. That's what I'm about. And I think, check with my references. I will turn the question to you, ask people about me, and what do I bleed? What do I really bleed? I bleed passion and energy about quality and safety and about patient care. Because that's what I was trying to do. But I'm a big fan of Minsky as well. I am a huge fan of Minsky, and I have actually worked with a variety of those institutions, and I think they play a vital role. And I'm sorry they're going through some of the issues that they are, but I hope it gets solved for the good of the faculty, but most importantly the students, which gets translated into the workforce of tomorrow. And we got to get it solved. And somebody's got to get it solved and move on, because those students are suffering.
Okay, Harriet has a follow-up, and then we have Sonia and Senator Bonhoff, and then I think we'll have to wrap it up then.
Beyond your own personal integrity and ethics, professionally, there is a whole other set of ethics. As a researcher, you are also held to that same level. Can you talk about that specifically and how that also helps alleviate any of the conflict of interest concerns?
As a researcher, and again, my strengths were more in clinical practice and education, less so in research. You can't do it all. But the policies that govern academic integrity and research are very, very clear. And I did have an opportunity to look at those that the university has on the website, and they are up to date, and I totally support them. It is about truth. It's about honesty. It's about hard work. And I think as a pure researcher, if you'll allow me to learn that term, if you're going to publish this information, it has a downstream effect. And that's the ethics that's involved. Could you fabricate? Fabrication is not to be tolerated. Mistakes do occur. But that's in the period of inquiry and openness and interrogation, if you will. But I think you have to be very, very firm about research ethics and the rules and regulation. It's very difficult in this day and age. And there are a lot of ways to check plagiarism and so forth, but it does occur, and I think the university has to have a very strong position.
I didn't ask that question probably properly. What I really wanted was trying to clarify as much for the group was your knowledge of the academic objectivity requirement and how that helps you be prepared.
There are policies, there are rules about the use of laboratory animals, about radiation safety, chemical safety. All of this goes into production of good or the result of good research. Plus, it's about fabrication of data. Data is the most important. Data, which becomes information, is the most important thing there is to a researcher.
Thank you.
And that's where it begins.
Sonia.
Mr. Chair, I'll pass. You've addressed the issues I wanted to raise.
Thank you.
Senator.
Dr. Bender. Mr. Chair, thank you. Do you foresee any reason why you would need to recuse yourself in a regent meeting?
If the situation, if someone felt that I was conflicted, I would then recuse myself. Also, it's up to my internal knowledge about issues. If I feel I have a conflict of interest, of course I would recuse myself. But any specific question, I would have to know the specific question, Senator, as to whether or not, if you have a hypothetical question.
Mr. Chair and Dr. Bender, that's what, people really do not want to put a regent there who can't fully serve, who's going to be recusing themselves. So do you predict?
I do not predict. I do not predict. I have nothing in my history or in my internal knowledge bank that would, as I've reviewed some of the overview materials, that would ask me to do that, or that I felt that I would need to recuse myself.
Thank you.
Senator Pratt has a follow-up.
Yes,
Thank
Senator.
You. Just as a quick follow-up, Dr. Bender. Do you have any financial interest in Mayo that would cause you to recuse yourself from any votes? I think, is another line of questioning along the same line as Senator.
That's a really good question. I have, as I have to the university, contributed my personal monies to the development and philanthropy student scholarships. You can check the University of Minnesota Duluth, especially. I have gifted a significant scholarship to the medical students up there, but I have no financial interest in Mayo. As an employee, I was strictly salaried, and that was about it. Every 2 weeks, I knew what I was getting and giving to the state of Minnesota, to the nation, and to the city. So, absolutely not. I think it's an excellent question. Though the research that I was involved in, and there's some little lingering projects, were all clinically based comparative effectiveness research about different types of treatments in radiology and different diseases. But there was no money involved.
Thank you.
No money involved. Good question.
Another follow up.
Just a quick financial. Mayo retirement monies are. Any of them invested in a way that addresses innovation coming out of Mayo and or Mayo rate of return on operations or anything like that?
No, I have. I never went so far to. I think everyone else stole my ideas. And I was the slow one. I was so nice to give it away, and then people stole it and then went for it and took it and used it. I think my ideas are out there, but I never received a penny for it.
I wasn't so much aimed at yours as the pool investment of the investment fund of Mayo that you may be in.
No.
Does it have any tie to how performance happens?
No.
Okay.
Good. Well, thank you very much. And any closing comments?
Well, I thank each and every one of the committee council, if you will, for doing this very, very busy and very difficult process that you have. I've enjoyed my opportunity to make it to this stage. If selected, as my mother and father always asked me to do, was to do my best. And I think I've work hard and do my best. And that's what I would promise this committee as well as the state. I think I can make a difference. I believe I can make a difference. Educational modeling, efficiencies, effectiveness, having some different ideas to bring to the table. And I will assure you that I'm an excellent team player.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.